The Magicians by Lev Grossman has a giant library that holds a book for every person. Every book holds the complete history of each person. There are several blank pages at the end of the book, a space for the story to continue. Bruce Almighty, that stars Morgan Freeman and Jim Carrey, has a very normal-looking beige filing cabinet that stands alone in a plain white room. Morgan Freeman, who is playing the God character, keeps this cabinet with each person's prayers in order to keep them organized. Jim Carrey's character settles for the more modern email system. Cloud Atlas is a movie entirely about reincarnation and the ways past actions impact present and future events and actions. The Old Testament of the Bible tells us that God has a book called the Book of Life, which holds the recorded names of each person destined for heaven and the world to come. Some Buddhists believe in the cycle of life, death, and rebirth into a new life called samsara. I think it's fair to say that the cornerstone of human experience is curiosity. People have different relationships with curiosity. Some find anxiety in the unknown, seeking to find a safe place in which things are constant. Some find that the restriction and structure of the safe place is more dangerous than the unknown. The relationships humanity has built and fostered over millennia with the unknown has given us some of the strangest parts of humanity. We have hundreds of separate cultures that are based in how they see the unknown, how they seek the unknown, who holds the keys to the unknown, and whether or not it is inherently good or bad to seek the answers from the unknown. This is where things get a little cloudy in this conversation. It's really hard for me to point to one religion, culture, or school of thought or philosophy that exactly knows the answers to these questions. And I think most of the sources would equally say that they don't have all the answers, that some things are supposed to be secrets, only known to the highest deity in their pantheon. But most of them would also say that there is a great something which has these answers. Welcome to Mancy, a podcast
We're finally at the intro.
We're doing it.
I was like, is an
Listen,
intro happening?
Why are you being such an asshole? Let me do my shit. Fuck. Welcome to Mancy, a podcast about the history of magic. This is episode 52, part one of our series on the Akashic Records. I'm Elle Alder, a professional psychic and solitary eclectic witch. With me is my co-host, RJ.
I'm RJ Walker. I am a spoken word poet and writer.
So, this is the beginning of my series of episodes on the Akashic Records.
Yeah, I feel like, part of the reason Elle is here is because Elle knows a lot about the spiritual stuff. And I think it is a good idea to allow Elle to talk about what she is an expert in.
What? You mean like I might actually have things to say about stuff?
Yeah. And so if we're going to cover something Elle is an expert in, then Elle should write these episodes. And Elle knows a lot of stuff. So this is going to be a long, ongoing series on the Akashic Records.
Yeah, I don't actually know. So you actually cut me off for the part where I was going to explain why this is going to be a very long, ongoing thing. But it is going to be a very long, ongoing thing. And that is because I am writing a book. It's going to be my first book. And I'm writing the book on the Akashic Records because I've been really frustrated with the Akashic Records, the way that we talk about them, the language that we use to talk about them, the ways that people interact with them, and the amount of work that I have to do to teach people how to use the fucking Akashic Records. So I was like, I'm gonna write a book, and then y'all can read my book, and then y'all know what's up. So that's what we're gonna do. Except I have a podcast. I have like this whole podcast with like this other human that we get to talk about weird shit. And so I don't actually know what people want to know about the Akashic Records. Like, I have no idea, because the only thing that I know is that I can't find things that I want to know about it. And so that's why I'm doing this podcast, where we're doing the series of episodes throughout the podcast. Also, it helps RJ for him to have a little break, because he's got a lot of stuff going on.
I literally have so much stuff going on.
Yeah, like, the amount of writing time we have in the house is a lot. So I'm kind of doing these, like, sporadically sprinkled throughout. They're going to be complete whole episodes. So they're not going to have continuations of stories, but they will have, like, this is what we were talking about today. And then the next episode will be something different in that series. So they'll be kind of sprinkled throughout.
Yeah. I really am enjoying continuing our theriomancy trend so far with animals, and I want to do birds next, but I do not have the time to properly devote to writing about augury. So luckily, Elle is filling in with expertise about the Akashic Records. My information on the Akashic Records is fairly limited, especially compared to Elle's. I know some of the more problematic parts regarding the...
I don't even feel like you know enough about them to say anything.
I mean, people like Blavatsky.
But what do you know about her?
I know the problematic parts.
I know, but like, could you talk in depth about her beliefs and why that is the thing?
No, that's why you're here.
That's what I mean. That's what I mean, is RJ has big opinions about things that he doesn't know all the things about, which is fine. That's cool. I'm going to be here to teach us.
Well, pardon me if I have big opinions about, like, Nazism.
Well, I mean, and that's the thing is, like, it's not that that isn't inherently bad, but I want to look at, because the ways that she interacted with it and kind of how that happened are where shit gets weird and where it gets weird with theosophy and why we don't really have theosophy anymore. Like, there's all of that stuff that you're like, well, Nazis, that's why. And it's like, no, this is a really interesting, deeply complex thing with, like, real beliefs, which is fucked up. She fucked up beliefs, but that's okay. That's next episode. Blavatsky's next episode.
Well, regale me. I mean, we talked about theosophy a little bit, I think, in our Tulpamancy episode.
I think so.
Where theosophers kind of adapted, like, the Tibetan Buddhism practices from the Himalayas.
And that's Blavatsky. So Blavatsky traveled. She says that she spent about 20 years of her life when she was, like, in her early 20s to 40s in, like, the Himalayas doing, like, this deep work with reincarnation and the Akashic Records. And that's where she found, like, the Great White Lodge and all of that
stuff. The Great White Lodge, you say?
Yes. And so... all of theosophy is, like, that stuff that's, like, talking about, like, the Tulpas and the Himalayas and all of that. That's Blavatsky's influence in it.
So I'm going to try to, I guess, summarize theosophy. Theosophy, not the movement, but just the general, like, concept, the core belief, is that there is one universal truth, and all religions are mere branches off of this one universal truth. And you need to understand all of these religions to follow all of their branches to get to this one universal source or truth of knowledge and spiritualism and magic or whatever.
Yeah. There's a really good meme that I'm going to read to you.
Oh.
That I found that's on this topic, actually.
Oh, I love memes related to extinct religions.
You know, actually, one of my main sources that I'm going to use, K. Paul Johnson, is a theosophist. Like, there's a lot of people who actually study theosophy.
Well, study it, but do they, like, practice?
Yeah. He's a practitioner of it, yeah.
Well, nearly extinct religion. Defunct. Let's say defunct. I don't think there's a central organization anymore.
Okay, so this is a meme. I believe there's one God, and she was like a single woman, and she was just dating. She went out on multiple dates with multiple prophets, and that's how it happened. She said the exact same thing to different prophets, exact same thing, but because they were men, they understood different shit and wrote different shit down, and that became religions. That's all religion is. It's mansplaining. Relevant meme. Yeah, so, and we'll talk more about theosophy, like, in the next episode. This is really and truly just the intro. This is the intro to how I got introed to the Akashic Records. So this is, like, my story, kind of, parts and pieces of my story.
Okay.
A little bit. And that was something, if you don't like that, and you're like, well, I fucking hate that. After I had done our interview, when we did the Tulpamancy episode, and we did my interview with Charlie, my guide, that most people were like, but I want more of that. What is, like, tell me about that. What is that experience? So this is going to be very much about, like, how I work with the Akashic Records, what it looks like for me, mostly because we don't have very much information about it. And I think it's important to have that. So, I don't know really where to begin with this. I don't know what you guys want me to talk about. I don't know what questions you have. Yeah, let me know. Send me an email. My email is laurelsofluxx@gmail.com. I want you to send me your questions about this so we have more things to talk about. At the end, we'll do that.
So as far as the reading, the traditional reading at the end of the episode, how would you like to handle that?
Well, so what we're going to do, because I went back and forth on this, because there's so many different sections of the Akashic Records, I was thinking that we could do like one section of the Akashic Records for per person, per episode. And then I decided I don't actually want to do that. And I just want to give away a full Akashic Record reading. And so if you send questions, if you email me questions, then you get entered to win that. And if you're a patron, if you're a patron on the Patreon, you are already automatically entered. You already have an entry.
Yay.
Into like the lottery of that. And my full Akashic Record readings are worth $75. That's what I'm currently charging for them online. I'd like that price is probably going to continue to keep going up as demand continues to go up. So like, yeah, send me your questions if you have them and you'll get entered to win a reading, which is great.
And if you are on Patreon, feel free to send us a Patreon message if you don't want to send an email.
Sure. I mean, I'd prefer an email, but sure, yeah, do that. That's cool. I'll watch it. They go to my email anyway.
Yeah.
It just is more streamlined for me to read it all in this. It's fine. However y'all want to do it. You'll get entered to win either way. You only get one entry per episode. I detail this later on in the episode. So don't spam me. Don't send me 10 questions in different emails thinking you're going to get a different entry. You get one entry. So those are the rules. Okay, are you ready?
I'm ready. Regale me. I've got this nice, like, armchair that I low-key stole.
Yeah, RJ stole an armchair and is lounging.
I mean, they're all from the like, refuse pile, the recycled materials pile, but yeah.
Okay, ready?
Yeah, ready.
Okay. This subject is complex and not at all well-researched or written about, which is my biggest problem with the history of the Akashic Records. I'm hoping to give a thorough introduction to the records, beginning with a focus on the use of Akashic Records as a modality for psychic readings and healings, and then looking at the history starting in the 1800s with/alongside/in conjunction with the spiritualist movement, because they kind of came up at the same time, moving into the second wave of the popularity of the Akashic Records, and then finishing off with how we can and should be working with them now. So here is your warning that this is really, really complex, and we're going to have to talk about some really hard stuff. I've been conducting research on this since November, like just for my book since November, and trying to pinpoint kind of a starting point for this topic. I have literally 6 different Word documents all starting at a different point in this, trying to figure out like where that happens. And it's been like pretty much impossible, mostly because it's hard to find a definitive starting point, because a lot of the information we have about the records is obscured nonsense that in some parts exists to cover a history that includes lauding the Aryans as a master race.
Yeah. First and second wave spiritualists were messy as shit. And a lot of them were on that Nazi train. Mm-hmm. If you remember from our automatic writing episode, a lot of the people we talked about that were connected to Nazism were also connected to Theosophy.
Yeah, I don't want to cover up these the parts of the records because I feel like it's dishonest to do that.
Also, a little hypocritical to talk about, like, this is a record of the history of past lives and then cover up part of the history.
Well, and that's kind of – that is – that's a motivating thing for me in the book. When we talk about it, that's one of like the largest critiques I have over a lot of the existing writing about the Akashic Records. That idea of not seeking to cover up the history of the Akashic Records, but instead of confronting it, learning from it, moving on from it, you know, all of those things, that's the work that the Akashic Records wants us to do. And so far, no one is fucking doing it. And I don't get it. I don't know why we aren't. So, like, I think it's scary. I think people are afraid of what that means. I think people are afraid of confronting, you know, the shitty things that they've done. We all have those things in our past of like, ooh, I should not have done that. But there are things that we've done that we learn from, that we grow from. So, I don't want to cover it up. But it's going to be hard.
I mean, I think
it's going to be tough.
I think people don't do that for the same reason that they don't deconstruct their privilege.
Right.
Because you are implicated.
No, and that's
when
fine.
When you do it.
The Akashic records are not the modality for you. If that is you, if that is how you feel about it, if that is your approach, you're going to have a bad time with the Akashic records. And you're going to have a bad time getting a reading from me in the Akashic records. This is going to be uncomfortable. This is going to be hard to sit with in parts, but we're going to do it. We're going to be better people because of it. And we're going to go for it. So today's episode is going to focus on my introduction with the Akashic records and how I use them in my own life, as well as with my clients. In the process of researching, I found myself just really frustrated with the metaphysical bullshit, as I ever am. Telling the story of the Akashic records requires us to do the exact work we go to the Akashic records to do. The history of the Akashic records is thus far mysterious and hidden intentionally. It is an intentional hiding of humanity's first recorded interactions with the Akashic records that we have to confront in order to really study the Akashic records. Most likely, if you ask someone what I was known for as a psychic, they would say the Akashic records. I honestly don't really know how that happened. I've been a student of the tarot for about 13 years, and I love it. Every part of the practice of tarot is interesting and fascinating to me and has been since I did a presentation on tarot my sophomore year of high school in my debate class. I came to know the Akashic records about 3 years into my career as a psychic from a good friend and trusted colleague, Jennifer Martin. She offers past life readings using the Akashic records. And I'm going to, like, talk more about that specific interaction and everything later. Just know that I was a psychic for a bit before I found it, and that was about 6 years ago was my first interaction with them. Instead, we're going to teleport to 2018, the year I opened my first metaphysical store. As I was in the process of opening my store, Lilydale, a spiritualist camp in Western New York.
Is it a camp?
It is a camp. Technically a camp. That's what they're called, spiritualist camps.
Oh, I thought they had like houses.
They do.
And infrastructure.
Yeah, they do.
But they're camping?
Well, they're camps because that's what they were at the invention of them at the beginning of the spiritualist movement. They had camps that they would set up to take tents to, and that was where people would practice, and they were seasonal because, like, Western New York in the wintertime sucks. So they would have, like, seasons. They all have seasons of, like...
I see. Technically, everything is a camp.
No, that's just...
I know what you mean.
Google it.
I know
fucking
what you
Google
mean.
Fucking Google it.
I know what you mean, but it's kind of funny.
It's called a camp
because it used to be a camp before they built houses.
Why don't you literally just Google it?
I know what you're talking about, but I just think it's funny.
So they announced that they were having a weekend-long intensive course on the Akashic Records taught by Sandra Ann Klingler and Sharon Ann Taylor,
Klingler.
Who are sisters. Yep. Klingler, that's her last name. Google it if you would like to.
No, it's
you
rolls
can Google
off.
Everything
it's,
I've said.
It's a great sounding
so
name.
So their
to
names
say.
Are their sisters. Their names are Sandra Ann Klingler and Sharon Ann Taylor.
Yes.
Which feels cruel.
The Klingler sisters.
I don't actually, one of them is married. I think one of them hadn't ever gotten married. I don't know which one has the original last name or if they still do. Like, I don't know. I'm just, and like, it gets weirder. These peeps get weirder. So here we go. They aren't even that weird in comparison to like Edgar Casey and Blavatsky, who are just crazy people. Anyway. It was taught by these two sisters. Sandra Ann Klingler is one of the leading readers in teaching and like discussing the Akashic records and in America. And she's published by Hay House, who is like
Hay House.
Yeah, it's like the head like Love and Light publishing house.
Oh, just like the corny.
Yeah, like
yoni egg.
They don't do yoni eggs. That's a
like,
little. That's too edgy for them.
Like hip, too edgy. Okay.
Yeah,
so
like
they're,
yoni
they're
eggs
like,
are too edgy.
Like Christian Love and
they're,
Light.
They're
not hippie Love and Light.
They would say that they really resonate with the Christ consciousness.
Oh, the Christ consciousness.
Christ consciousness is what they use. Yes, that's the term that a lot of people use.
Activate Christ consciousness.
Ka-choo!
Begin God machine initialization. Gundam wing a go.
Yes, and that is, remember Doreen Virtue? The woman that you're like, oh, this is the Jesus lady.
So I got a story for everyone. So I was getting Elle some gifts and I was at one of my favorite local bookstores, Weller Bookworks. They helped me get the copy of the Aeneid when we did like our second episode ever. But I found a tarot deck that was all white Jesus. It was a white Jesus themed.
Technically oracle deck.
Oracle deck, excuse me. Tarot is
a very specific system.
Yeah, but this is a white Jesus oracle deck to bring you white Jesus peace, I guess. I don't know. But I sent a picture to Elle, and Elle was like, "Oh, that's by Doreen Virtue. There's lots of drama with Doreen Virtue."
I was like,
Virtue.
"I'll tell you the tea," but it's an in-person tea moment.
Yeah. Apparently, we don't want to get sued for defamation.
Oh, no. I actually don't give a fuck. Like, oh. Doreen Virtue, this is true. Like, there are blog posts that people can go find where Doreen Virtue – so Doreen Virtue was, like, kind of in, like, the 90s and aughts when, like, the spiritualist – that wave of the spiritualist movement was coming up, which is the same time that, like, Akashic Records really made a resurgence, was, like, 90s and aughts. Doreen Virtue was, like, the major published, like, author for Hay House. And she has probably, like, I would say, like, at least 50 to 100 different decks that she's done, all of these books. She does, like, angel numbers, all sorts of shit.
Angel numbers?
She goes by Doreen Virtue PhD. She has her PhD, like, in metaphysical arts that she acquired from a non-accredited university.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
Which is fine. That's a lot of people do that.
Okay.
It's fine. It's good. I'm not saying anything about that. I am saying... She had a blog post when I had my store, so that must have been 2019, where she just was like, all of this shit is demonic, and if you don't denounce all of this, you're going to go to hell because Jesus told me so.
Baby Jesus showed up, little 6-pound, 11-ounce baby Jesus in his manger, swaddled on down.
And she was like,
told me.
Listen, I know that I have a lot of things out there that are technically against this, but I just can't do anything about it. I have to let them keep selling them. Because of contracts.
All of these things are evil, but also
please continue
I get
to
money
give me
from them.
Money yeah. for no, and that is my issue.
Baby Jesus
Virtue.
Said it was okay if I continued to make money off of evil, but that I shouldn't do the evil things anymore.
Yeah. So and like I have never really resonated with Doreen Virtue. Like her work is just not something that I'm like. Oh, okay. So I literally Googled Doreen Virtue. And it says Doreen Virtue Home, and then the first, like, little, like, the gray, like, oh, this is the intro of this website. Say no to Jesus calling New Age channeled books. The Doreen Virtue testimony about why she left the New Age to follow Jesus as her Lord and Savior. This is literally the first thing that comes up when you Google her. So that is my issue, is that she still is making money and still has these books, still has everything out. But she hasn't, to my knowledge, denounced it, been like, I'm donating these things. Because even if she took that money and donated it to a church, I'd be chill with that. That's the issue with Doreen Virtue. So Doreen Virtue was big for Hay House.
So concept, and hear me out.
I don't know if I will, but go for it.
She was always this exact flavor of crazy before yeah. Jesus and after Jesus.
Yeah. Like, it's just so, like, it's just ridiculous. So, yeah. So Doreen Virtue kind of started, like, didn't start Hay House. I think that Hay House is so popular because Doreen Virtue is so popular. And I think Doreen Virtue is popular because Hay House is popular. So it's like one of those like cyclical business things that kind of happens over time.
Yeah. Like I forget who Rupi Kaur's publisher is, but it's similar like feedback loop.
Yeah, for sure. While you're doing that, can you Google Sandra Ann Klingler and tell me how much her readings are right now?
Sandra Ann with a K?
Yep. K-L-I-N-G-L-E-R.
Klingler or Klinger? Mm-hmm.
Klingler.
Because it auto-corrected to Klinger. Okay. Welcome. She's got a lightning storm is her.
Yeah, she does. Yeah.
It's like, hey, do you want a reading? Here's the See It Storm to comfort you. oh, that's also the cover of her book, Power Words, Igniting Your Life with Lightning Force.
Okay, are you gonna ask her if you can...
wrote her book.
You should be like, hey, do you need a narrator? Because I could do it.
The Akashic Tarot.
Yeah, so she has tarot decks that are based on the Akashic records.
Oh my God, the art.
It's so bad.
The art looks like Lord of the Rings fan art from 2007.
It's not good. And I mean, so this is the person I learned Akashic records from. Like, this is who I went to, this, for sure.
This looks like a self-published, like, young adult Christian author uses this as their cover.
But how much are her ratings?
I'm trying to... Consultations, is that what I'm looking for?
Probably. Yeah.
What to expect? Featured on a whole bunch of...
Oh my God,
channels.
Yeah. She has like all these like TV shows that she's been on.
You want to know how... Oh, here it is. I was like, you want to know how I know it's expensive? The price is hard to find.
Yeah.
But I found it. Cost for 30-minute session, $250.
Yeah.
45 minutes, $350. An hour, $450.
So I charge $90 an hour for my readings. So I just wanted everyone to kind of, like, have a moment to, like, understand, like, this is who this person is. If you want to get a reading for – I've never had a reading from her. I don't know if they're $400 good. I feel like –
Hay House Radio.
If
she
you,
was featured on.
Yeah, I feel like if you charge that much, you've got to be that good.
The London Daily News, BBC, Penguin Random House, UK. Okay, is she British?
She's not. She's American.
She's got a lot of British.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of schools for like spirituality in the UK.
Okay, the Discovery Channel.
Mm-hmm. We should find her
on an episode of like Ghost Adventures.
I don't know. I have no idea. I have no clue. So this is who this
Author,
is the person
speaker clairvoyant.
I know. I love the clairvoyant in there. So this is the person I learned Akashic records from. Kind of cool. So our conference started with an intro to both sisters, the stories of how they came to understand their abilities and their perspectives and beliefs in spirituality. Sandra had a near-death experience when she was an adult that really shaped her career and how she approaches spirituality. The knowledge that she gained in that experience gave her the ability to access and believe in the records in a way she hadn't previously. So we spent an hour about talking about all these things, and that's when the meditations started.
And that's when the meditation began.
That's when the meditations with an S. That was when they started.
The plural you have to, so you've got to do like three meditations or four at the same time.
Oh, you think this
if you want to like open up every chakra and have baby Jesus approach you and tell you what you're doing is witchcraft. If you want to have baby Jesus, you got to quadruple meditate.
Just wait. Okay.
You got to astral project and your astral projection has to meditate.
I actually am going to explain some of the meditations in here. So because obviously we need to do that because people will be dying with curiosity. So actually, before we do that, audience participation time.
Oh, no.
Audience participation time.
Is this something they could do while they're driving?
No. Definitely you want to save this. If you're listening to this in the car, don't audience participate, but just believe me. RJ, will you audience participate so they don't have to?
Sure.
Go ahead and pull up Google or whatever search engine you want.
I thought I was going to like meditate, but no, I'm Googling.
Google.
Okay,
so Google Akashic Records, which is spelled AKASHIC Records.
Okay, I found the Wikipedia.
How many meditations and mentions? No, I don't want the Wikipedia. Oh. I just want you to Google it.
Okay.
How many meditations and mentions of meditations do you see on that first page?
Nothing there. What did I learn everything here? Library of Information. No. No. They're in a higher dimension, so I guess we're getting a little closer. 100% focused on that person. Book of Life, Edgar Cayce readings. Sanskrit.
Mm-hmm. Okay, go to YouTube for me.
Okay. I'm
gonna hit and type in Akashic Records.
I'm going to hit the videos button.
Yeah, that's probably the move.
What are the Akashic Records? Sadhguru. What does it take to access the Akashic Records? Spooky thumbnail. Here we go. Guided meditation. How to access the book.
So they're pretty, like, tell me.
Sorry.
Just joking.
Yeah, just, you know, it's
the air. It's dry, the poison air. Yeah. Okay, so in, like, kind of your Google, like, just the first initial, did you find anything that was, like, relevant that, like, would tell you what the Akashic Records were?
Yeah.
What was it? Like, can you just read, like, just, like, the first couple of sentences?
I mean, are they quality sources? I don't know. I haven't looked at
them. No, I know. I'm just, yeah.
Well, the Wikipedia and the related
I don't want the Wikipedia.
Citations.
Although the Wikipedia doesn't.
This one says, what are the Akashic Records? Learn everything here. Wellandgood.com, which is a spiritual health website. Here's a Medium article under holisticism. What are the Akashic Records? So that could be anybody writing about that. Goop.com, reading the Akashic Records for your soul. Nope.
Gwyneth Paltrow. That is the yoni egg lady. Yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah, we have, like, this, like, huge variety of, like,
EdgarCayce.org.
That would be the, like, that's my source. Like, that's the person that I'm in love with right now.
Is Edgar Cayce alive still?
No, he's dead. He died because he did too many readings a day. I'm not fucking with you. That's a real thing. That is a real thing. His spirits were like, you can do 5 readings a day. And he had such a huge demand for them that he went to 8. And, like, within 3 months of moving to 8 readings a day, he had a stroke and died overnight.
Oh, my God. What is that mythological creature? Hold on. Let me look this up, because that is exactly this piece of Japanese folklore. So human head, cow body, creature. Here it is. A kudan. So kudan is a mythological creature from Japanese folklore that has a human face and the body of a cow, and it will always accurately predict the future and then immediately die.
Oh, yeah. Kind of like that for Edgar Cayce. Yeah. I mean, like, Edgar Cayce was, I think he was in his, like, 70s when he died, and he died of, like, a stroke and a heart attack. And so probably that could have happened anyway. It just is, like, one of the things about him is that he was instructed to only do 5 readings a day, and when he moved it to 8 to meet demand, he died.
So. Yeah. I mean, with the kudan, like, it's usually born as, like, a mutant cow, but it's perfectly capable of human speech and wisdom at birth.
Whoa,
it tells the future,
that's cool.
And then just, like, dies because it can't live. Usually it's, like, major events, like,
it seems really unfair.
And it's always bad. It's always bad.
Yeah,
so it's always, like, a poor crop harvest, an earthquake, a plague, you know? Yeah, and then the kudan, like, dies.
Okay. Yeah. So kind of like the, like, meh, like, what we find or what's available about the Akashic Records is, like, that's, like, a source of frustration for me, because no one ever says anything. It's just Akasha means sky, aether, great being, whatever the fuck in Sanskrit. You literally were like, Sanskrit. You want to use the Akashic Records because they hold your infinite potential. Imagine how rich you could be if you remembered your lifetimes of being rich and how you came to be rich. Imagine how much money you could give me if you used my secret to get rich.
I mean, not gonna lie, that seems like, from what I have looked on my website, that seems like what the Akashic Records are, is like, here's this spooky thing that people don't know that much about, but because people don't know that much about it, I can sort of make up what it is and then make money.
Pay
off
me
of that.
Money, bitch. Yeah, like, I hate that. And, like, when I was writing this, I, like, had this whole rant about money and all of that, but, like, I deleted it. So, like, I don't think that money is evil. I don't think that it's not evil. Like, I mean, money is as evil as power is. And, like, people misuse it. And I just – that's just kind of it. We're going to talk more about kind of these dualities that we see, like, later on in this episode around money specifically. But that is the thing, is, like, that there's not information. And people are so fucking obsessed with these, like, get-rich-quick schemes. These, like, I'm going to teach you how to be skinny because you were fat in a past life and that's all you need. Like, those things are not what we're going to use the Akashic Records for. If you're here because you're one of those people, wrong podcast, try again. Like, you know.
I mean – if we follow Hermeticism, money is like an evil curse put on humanity to bind them. The curse is almost impossible to break.
Yeah.
As a form of, as money as a metaphysical concept, which is a thing that is not real. Money is not real.
It's not real.
We made it up.
Yeah. None of it's real. nothing is real, but I mean.
But, yeah, so.
I mean, like, there is something particularly exploitative about how we approach the Akashic Records, particularly in the way that they are marketed, right? I understand the Akashic Records to be a tool just like any other form of divination. I believe that Akashic Records are different from other forms of divination because they are the source from which other forms of divination get their information from. Do you know what I mean by that?
Yes. I remembered what I was going to bring up.
Yes.
I think what's really fascinating about the Akashic Records as a modern belief is that there is very little canon, at least canon that's respected.
Yes.
And when I say canon, so think about like folklore. Folklore does not have a canon, but it is consistent. It gets passed from one person to another to another to another, and each person adds or takes away things. That's why there's so many conflicting things in Celtic mythology, because there isn't really that much canon. And honestly, a lot of mythologies work like Celtic mythology in that way. Like it's really hard for us to imagine storytelling without canon, because everything today is canonized. Like all of the folklore is basically taken by Disney, canonized and copyrighted.
Mm-hmm.
I have the one true canon. This is the one true like canon for this story. This is the only valid telling of, you know, the Pied Piper is mine, because I got it from this source. But that's not how a lot of these magical beliefs actually work, right? There is no canon. It's just something that has grown organically from like collective contribution.
Well, so, and there are like, you're familiar with collective unconsciousness, yeah? Of course.
Yeah.
So people think, I mean, people believe that the Akashic Records are the collective unconsciousness. That is what they are. That's the same thing.
I mean, the collective unconsciousness, I feel like, is a little different, right? From what I understand, the Akashic Records is like a historical record, and the collective unconscious is just like metaphysical space in general.
Yeah, same thing.
Okay.
Okay. Would you please explain to me what I mean by like the Akashic Records being the source from which other forms of divination get their information from?
I mean,
because you said you understood it, so let's see it. Tell me.
From what I. When did I say I understood that?
Because you were trying to say what you wanted to say.
Oh,
so you were like, yeah, yeah. Okay, but I have a thing I need to say now.
I said, from what I understand.
So, what I mean is that, like, the Akashic Records are really what contains that information. That's what has the information of the history. But it's also every thought, every feeling, every event, everything that has ever happened is in the Akashic Records. Like, if you wanted to get that detailed, you could. That's not really, like, you're not using them to their fullest ability if you're doing it that way, but you can. And so when we have, like, tarot is, like, coded things that mean something specific that resonate in like with us from our collective unconsciousness that brings out information also from the Akashic Records. And so when you're looking at the Akashic Records, like the Akashic Records as a modality is better for like general things, broader scoped things, while the tarot and other forms of divination that are a lot more pointed are better for like situational things. So I would go to a reader if I was like, what job should I take? I have these three jobs and I don't know what to do. I would go to the tarot. If I was like, I'm just feeling really out of touch with my life purpose. I don't know how I'm supposed to be serving people and I don't know what that looks like. And I'm wondering how I can use that in my career. Then I would use the Akashic Records for that. And so it's like the same information, but the ways that we access them and how they're synthesized in order for us to understand is different.
Okay. So things like tarot and other divination practices are tools, while the Akashic Records is like
the tool.
The source, the battery.
Yeah, the source. Yeah, exactly that. So that was good. That was a good way to put it. Okay. I feel like this leads people both clients and practitioners to really put the records on like a pedestal. I love the Akashic Records. Like the knowledge and everything that I gained from that little course really has built me a career. I think they're incredible. I love working with them. But it's like, you know, I did that work too. With the Akashic Records and the healing and everything that I've done from them, they showed me areas where I could put myself into it. You know, I really sought out that healing. I went into my study and journey with this, like, desperation. Like, when I went to the Akashic Records, when I found them, I was literally 6 weeks into, like, after I opened the doors on my first business. And nobody understands that kind of, like, desperation unless you fucking been there. And so like that's where I was at, is like this space of I was a reader, I had understood things about myself, I'd done a lot of deep healing, I had opened this business, and I was kind of like, okay, now what? And that was like where I'm at the Akashic Records. So do you have any questions so far?
Nope.
Nope. I just got in trouble, so I'm gonna be quiet now. Because you were, I mean, did you answer the question the first time I asked it, or did you say yes and then went back? Because I thought that's what we did. So you answered the other question.
I don't remember.
Cool. Okay. We're going to just keep moving on then. So we're going to talk about like more in-depth stuff. Ready?
Okay.
I had just taken this huge leap as a 24-year-old. I had moved home after I broke up with a person I thought I was going to marry. My parents had just separated. My father was struggling with mental illness, and I couldn't do anything but be a psychic. I just couldn't. I had my dream career working with the airlines, on track to have my own station or become a trainer, and I loved it. But I lost it because all of these things kept happening to me. It felt like I was going to be punished for everything but being a full-time psychic, so I just did that. At this time in my life, I was also struggling with my recovery from an abusive relationship that happened when I was 19 and 20. The pain I was living with motivated me to seek deep healing and answers. And so that was where I found the Akashic Records. That's where I ended up in Lilydale. I was like sitting in this room with these two women talking about shit. Do you want to guess what the room looked like? It's not nearly as like fancy as people probably think.
So you're in a room.
I was in Lilydale at the spiritualist camp in a permanent building.
Yeah, I'm guessing it was just like a dated living room.
No, so it's in a building called the Lyceum because it's a...
Oh, well, now that I know the building is called the Lyceum.
What is a Lyceum?
I don't know.
I was wondering this.
But it sounds way fancier than just a structure.
Yeah, so I went to it was in the Lyceum. That's what they call it. And it's like almost like a church room, like a church. Like if you walked into a church and they don't have, like you're not going to go sit in the pews, but you're going to go to like the activity area of the church. That's what it was like.
Ah, a lyceum. Here is the definition. A hall for public lectures or discussions, or an association providing public lectures, concerts, and entertainment.
Yes. So the Lyceum is kind of this like...
It's from Greek. That's, yeah.
Yeah, it's. I think it must be, probably they called it a Lyceum when they first opened Lilydale as a spiritualist camp. Because it's been around for like more than 100 years, so probably that's why.
Yeah, this is a lecture hall.
Yeah. So it is. It's just like a lecture hall. It has like linoleum floor. There's like this like giant picture, like a blown up 1970s picture of a duck. So it's like very like fuzzy. And they just have like the terrible chairs that are like the metal, and they have like the cushions on the bottom of them, and we're just chilling there. And it's like these two people. It's not fancy. It's not anything particularly specific. There's like 20 people in this room with me, all just sitting there asking questions. So Sharon has written several books, meditations. Sandra has written all the books and books, does meditations, cards, offers readings. And they opened this weekend answering questions about what was going on, their individual cosmologies, their approaches to reading, their history. So they take turns answering questions. And I will never forget this, but they like always, anytime I go to these classes with people who are older than like 45, they have to make some fucking comment about gender, about transgender individuals, and about fucking pronouns, like every fucking time. And this was no different. They like had to start an argument about gender and like whether or not that is affected by the Akashic records. And guess what? It's fucking not. Nobody cares. Anyway.
So like, you're telling me, hold on. Let me try to conceptualize this. So there were people at this camp, and they were in a lecture hall in the camp.
That looks like a church. Like
they were in the church lecture hall for a witchcraft conference.
No. Not – we don't – Lilydale does not do witchcraft. It is a spiritualist conference on the Akashic Records.
For a spiritualist conference – we're not witchcraft.
Yes.
Conference. Please don't call us that, even though it's kind of what
we're doing. Nope. There is no witch. There are no witches in Lilydale.
Oh, I'm sorry. There is no war in Bong Sing
Se. They feel very strongly that there are no witches in Lilydale.
The Fire Nation is not attacking. There is no war in Bong Sing Se. Okay. And they're wondering if their magical source metaphysical plane makes people have a gender?
I mean, so what we were talking about very specifically was she was like, well, so, you know, you have in past lives or in this lifetime when you get incarnated, you get born a man or a woman. Sometimes, you know, if you're a person that wants to do it, then you just change that because gender isn't a real thing anymore. Like very aggro.
Interesting. So your world of made up stuff.
I know.
is telling you that gender cannot be made up or that
genuinely
the made up world decides if you are a gender, which is a made up concept. Like, I don't.
I that's the thing that I don't really understand is that, like, gender and politics actually don't have to be talked about at all in, like, spiritualist study. Like, you literally just don't even have to talk about it, but it is a thing that no matter what, we have to talk about it.
Well, I feel like it is kind of connected because these sociological beliefs inherently become political when people enact those beliefs on or around other people.
Yeah, that is a thing, but it doesn't have to be that way when you're going for a spiritualist conference. Like, that it is a thing that has nothing to do with what we were doing. That's my point. Is like that these are things that, like, when you're doing these.
So the conference classes, was not on gender. They just turned it into on gender.
No. In my Akashic Record conference, when I went for like the weekend conference, we're like doing all of the intros. We haven't even done a meditation yet. We're sitting in this lyceum, like in shitty chairs. There's linoleum floor. There's like these two women that are like in their 60s that are talking about fucking deja vu and how our souls leave our bodies. And when we haven't, this is what they said. Sandra says that deja vu is when our souls leave our bodies at night and they're looking into the future potentials. And then we happen to end up at a future potential that our soul experienced during a dream one night. But can you believe that some men are born men and then decide that they're women? Like, that's essentially what it was. Like, that was how it went.
See, that just seems weird.
That's what I'm saying. I'm pointing that out. Like, in this story that, like, it doesn't make sense.
I would understand if the lecture was on, like, here's how the Akashic Records relate to gender.
They don't. Because gender is an entirely human thing. And so the Akashic Records will talk about things that have like elements of feminine and masculine in them. But gender specifically is a human thing that the Akashic Records really don't have very much to do with at all. Unless it's a specified, like, I have met people who are here to help change the paradigm on gender, like in human life. And so sometimes there, but like very rarely does gender have anything to do with anything in the Akashic Records. Your soul does not have a gender. Your soul's not like, I always have to be a man. Like, that's not how it works.
Okay.
So, yes. Okay. Are you ready for another question that you're just going to be so annoyed about me asking?
Sure.
So we're going to start our meditations after we make unnecessary comments about gender and talk about deja vu and all of this shit that's going on. And we're in this room and there's the linoleum and everything. So they tell us we're going to start our meditations for the conference by going into our sanctuary and meeting our guide to the Akashic Records. Do you know what the sanctuary is in meditation? That is a real thing. It is a real thing by practitioners.
I know what it is.
What is it?
So we talked about this in our Tulpamancy episode, actually.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Where you create your sanctuary or your castle or your world
yep.
or whatever people call it. And oh, my God. This reminds me of Fight Club when he's like, I'm going to meditate my spirit animal. And his sanctuary is like an ice cave. And there's like a little penguin like pops up and he goes, slide. And then slides down the ice. It's very goofy, not cute when you know the rest of Fight Club. But cute in the first time you see. You haven't seen it?
No. I read the book.
Yeah, we should probably watch it. It's a really good idea on the way that masculinity intersects with fascism. But anyway. Mm-hmm.
So you do know. Okay.
Yeah.
So the sanctuary, so when you're doing deep meditation practice and when you're like developing a meditation practice, having a sanctuary is like having the place that you always go to. And then like the idea when you're using meditation to access the Akashic Records or to do divination work is that like your sanctuary, like you're going to go inside the castle. And the castle is what holds your Akashic Records and all of this different stuff. So I go into meditation, which just involves kind of disconnecting from this reality and fully plugging into space magic, as RJ would call it. It's that space that I do my readings from. So like when I do readings, it's the same space. But when I meditate, I'm allowed to go deeper because I don't have to like translate and explain what I'm experiencing. I'm able to just kind of be present with what's going on. So in that space, I see my sanctuary, which is this like really ridiculous, kind of dumb, like purple Taj Mahal, like with for real, like that's what it looks like. It's just like this deep purple with like the like what?
So I'm just thinking about the opening song to Kingdom Hearts 2, which is Sanctuary by.
Do you want to sing a few bars of that?
No.
Oh, okay.
I don't, but it's really good. And I'm thinking about this concept and then applying it to Kingdom Hearts and realizing once again that Kingdom Hearts is full of metaphysical bullshit.
Yeah. Anyway, I really want to play Kingdom Hearts. I want to play that.
It's on the Switch right now, but you can only stream it. So don't pay $90 to stream it. Play it on my PlayStation.
Yeah, yeah, that's the move. Yeah, so it's like I have this like purple Taj Mahal. It has these like beautiful gardens in front of it. There's butterflies and roses and like all of that stuff. It feels like the perfect summer day all the time. So now that we found we do this meditation just to find our sanctuaries. And she like pulls us out of meditation. She's like, okay, let's talk about this. And then we go back into meditation like 30 minutes later. So like it's this whole like the meditations were fucking endless. There's only so many meditations you can do for real. So for this meditation, we were told to have a question or something that we wanted to have more clarity around. Sandra is leading this meditation and tells us to go inside our castle or whatever the building is and find the room that is the movie theater. She tells us that there will be a guide there and that that guide is our guide responsible to access for our access to the Akashic Records. Good. My guide is this elderly gentleman that looks exactly like the emperor from Mulan, but like in purple. You know, I don't know why.
Okay.
So that's what he looked like. He was very nice. He did not say anything to me.
You showed up and he was like, you posed as a man, disgraced your family, but you have brought honor to us all when you arrived.
The better thing is fucking what I sat on. What do you think I sat on in my movie theater, in my purple Taj Mahal with the emperor from Mulan in a purple outfit?
Oh, a love sack.
100% a beanbag chair. Because what else would you sit in?
Yeah.
Right? Especially if you're from Utah, a love sack is the only fucking option.
Yeah.
Which is true. So, I walk into the room and sit down in this beanbag chair, and we watch a movie. a memory of a past life. And that's kind of how I would describe when I do Akashic Records work, when I'm looking at past lives and looking at situations. It feels like a memory, like the moment, like a clip.
But since we're doing multiple meditations, it was you meditating. You get this vision of you watching a movie, and the movie is of you meditating elsewhere, and then your spirit leaves your
and
body.
And I wander around, and then I came spirits. Back, and I was a man, and then, that was weird.
And then a play takes place, and the play is of you meditating, and then the meditating you in the play.
You know, this is getting really meta for me.
We just have a simulacra of meditation happening until we reach the Great Owl's library from Last Airbender.
I mean, like, so kind of the idea, like the way that they did the meditations, and it's important to remember, like, I'm a professional psychic. Jennifer is with me. She's a professional psychic. We don't need to do 15 meditations to build to the point that we can, like, alter a past life. We don't need to do that. We need three meditations.
Like, when you get there, you can, like, fast travel after you've been there before.
Like, there is, like, they had kind of, they, I think, had really planned for people to not use the Akashic, like, this for, like, professional stuff. So it was, like, more personal, which is fine. But when you're teaching stuff to professionals that fucking know how to meditate already, like, there's, you can just skip a few steps. And so we could have missed a few of the meditations, but they were really building. And so it was like the first one we did, we went to the movie theater to, like, watch this thing. Then we go back into the movie theater, and then instead of, like, just watching the movie, we become part of the movie. And then we change the actions that happen. So we change the vibration of that past life so it doesn't affect us in the same way. Like, that's kind of the end goal of the exercise we were working on. Okay.
Okay. I have questions about the deja vu thing, but we can hold off on that till later.
I don't. Okay. Yeah, you're right. Let's do that. Let's hold off because I'm, like, trying to, like, this is like a, there's like a story going on here. Okay. So I sit in the beanbag chair. We watch a movie that is a memory of a past life. The idea of this meditation was to shift the energy around a memory from our Akashic records. I was just like, I did not know that questions were supposed to be brought. Like, I didn't know we were supposed to have all these things to work on. So I just asked my guides to show me what I need to know the most. So this is what I was shown. Me as a woman standing in a boarding room in a large boarding/apartment building in Chicago from around the 1920s. I was about 23 years old. I had extremely long, brown, curly hair. I was wearing a white nightgown/undergarment, like in the 1920s style. There was a man.
Ragtime music begins.
There was a man. It's not that happy. There was a man in the room with me, and he was older than me by about 5 or 10 years. He was dressed in a brown suit with a brown hat. I recognized him as the person who had abused me in this lifetime. Immediately. Like, I knew that that's who it was. I knew that that was the person in the scene with me.
Listen, doll, I'm sorry. I'll never do it again. Why'd you make me do that?
We were in a heated argument, and I was pregnant. He was the father. He was married to someone else, and we were arguing over what would happen next. As the memory progressed, I moved to standing at the end of the bed, facing towards the door. He was standing in front of me, between me and the door. The stakes of the argument were, like, really, really high, and I shouted at him, "I just want you to love me." He responded, "I do love you," and he pulled out a gun and shot me in the chest. Like, I just had this memory of, like, sitting across from this person that abused me in this lifetime, and him, like, just pulling out a gun and was like, "Well, I knocked you up. I don't know what to do. You're obviously a problem. I do love you."
"I do love you, dame. I love you enough to take you out of this world."
So that gunshot brought me straight out of the meditation. And I, like, shot forward. I was like, because I felt like I had just been shot. And we were supposed to be in meditation. So I focused on grounding myself and trying to figure out what I had just seen and what it meant. We spent the rest of the weekend playing in the Akashic records and seeing what we could find and discover about them.
Purple Emperor guy was like, anyway, next movie.
As the weekend progressed, I gained this true understanding of my relationship. I had struggled with the idea of my abuser being my soulmate for years. I had clients coming to me begging for me to do love spells so their partners would obsess over them the way my abuser obsessed over me. Because of the Akashic records, I really came to understand that the reason I felt like the person who had abused me was my soulmate, the reason I was just desperate for him to pick me, and the reason that our relationship felt like life or death is because it had been in another lifetime, and there was still that energy there that was kind of holding that relationship together. I came to understand that my draw to him was entirely related to this version of myself that had been abused, manipulated, and murdered by him. It is only natural that I would seek future interactions with him that that would be empowering. I would seek future interactions with that soul to be empowering and ones that encourage my own independence away from him. Once I understood that I was leading my life from a place of fear, the fear of being loved, the fear of being unlovable. Being unloved felt like this punishment, a thing that I could, that I would earn because I wasn't brave enough to love. And being loved felt like a death sentence. I understood that I could control that fear. I realized that I had this sort of tangible event that had led me to feeling the way that I did. I also understood that the fear, the way I was living my life, was irrational and unnecessary. And I was not put here to suffer, to feel afraid of love. I was put here for a lot of reasons, but none of them were that. And I was here to overcome and heal from that. So this like experience with the Akashic Records, I was like, oh, holy shit. Like, I understand so much about this relationship. A couple months after the course, I felt ready to see if I could let go of that belief. One of my friends and colleagues specializes in emotion code. You probably don't know what emotion code is, but do you know what it is?
Emotion code. .exe. Execute. Load program.
Is that what you do every time you go on a date? Got the emotion code in.
No. I just imagine it's like a cyberpunk anime. We're like, what's happening to him? He's loading into the emotion code. He's so angry. His power level, it's off the charts.
Emotion code is a healing modality that basically looks at trapped emotions or believes that there are trapped emotions that need to be addressed. And then, like, through a series of muscle testing and asking your body, releases those emotions. And so it just helps you kind of, like, if you're holding on to fear, if you're holding on to hate, if you're holding on to love, unrequited love, all those things, it clears them for you.
Yeah, I thought that was just, like, meditative therapy. Like, when I was doing cognitive behavior therapy, a lot of it was like meditation, unpacking, letting go, that kind
yes.
of thing.
Yes, And there are some people who, you know, need to have that clinical side of it. There are some people that need to have the spiritual side of it. It's wellness. It's wellness and like working on like being aware of the shit that you do, for sure. Emotion code is more like, it's definitely more magical, like, depending on the practitioner, they'll have certain ways that they do it, and they'll do like cord cuttings or spray or light some sage or whatever. Mm. Like, it just kind of depends on the practitioner. But
I see. On the subject of palaces or sanctuaries, that's like the whole concept behind Persona 5 is that you're a thief and you infiltrate people's sanctuaries and steal like the emotional things that they have, which forces them to let go of it in reality. So basically sort of like forced emotion code through psychic heisting of other people.
Like, I guess emotion code really is this, like, very gentle practice that, like, you might have, like, the process of it, they have this sheet that has, like, 5 different rows and 5 different columns. And so the practitioner will go through and say, is there any emotion in column A that needs to be released? Is there any – in each box, like, each column has a box of, like, 6 different emotions in it. And so they'll be like – does your body have anything to release in column A? Is there anything, like, and your body would test yes, and then it would say, like, is there anything from box or from, like, row 1 in column A? And you would test yes and be like, is that emotion anger? No. Is that emotion sadness? No. Is that emotion love unreceived? Yes. Okay. Can we ask your body if it is ready to release that emotion? The answer would be yes or no. If it's yes, then they would go through their releasing process. If it's no, then they don't release it.
Or you enter someone's sanctuary with your plucky band of thieves.
I want you to know that people listen to this podcast and are actually intrigued by what I just said. Like, people care about it, but that's okay.
That is intriguing, but also plucky band of thieves.
This is just stealing the emotions.
And you take the traumatizing thing or the obsession thing that they have in there, and then they have to let go of that emotion because it has been stolen.
What was your question about deja vu?
Okay. So her opinion on deja vu is that your spirit has left your body while you're sleeping, time traveled slash gotten a view of the future, and you are experiencing that future again when you have deja vu.
Mm.
Yes, is that – do I understand this concept correctly?
That Say it again.
Teaching? While you are sleeping, your spirit basically astral projects, views a portion of the future, and then returns to your body. And then when you experience that moment in your future again, you have deja vu.
Yes.
So, question then, because that is a very, I guess, fatalist view of the future. Basically, the future is pre-written. And so your spirit can view this pre-written future.
So, no. Anyone who works with the Akashic Records, anyone that I've found that works with the Akashic Records that is like, I am an Akashic Record student. I am an Akashic Record reader. That's what I do. Anything that I have found on it, including myself, does not believe in like fate or destiny determined
yes,
by the Akashic Records.
But this specific
I'm answering your question. If you let me.
Okay.
So what she is talking about is not that there are like very specific things that you will arrive at. I do think that there are certain things in our lives, like people that we're going to meet or things that are going to happen, that you're just going to get to no matter what happens, because that's like part of the journey, part of the thing that you're doing. But basically what she was saying, when you're dreaming or when you're sleeping and your soul goes out, like it astral projects out of your body, it's exploring different opportunities. And so she's saying,
okay,
like,
so
you're looking at three
different.
Yeah. So, and you could, like, that's why dreams are so wild, because you're like exploring different. And she was saying that dreams are really our adventures as a soul that we remember, which I don't necessarily agree with, but that's okay. And she was saying, like, sometimes your soul has explored a particular path, and then you wind up on that path and you end up doing that thing. And it's like this memory of, I've been here before, because your soul like went and explored that as an option and then ended up there.
Okay. That makes more sense.
Is that better?
Yeah. So then future gazing is more just like looking at all the branches and then picking a branch.
Yes.
And then if you were something like the Kudan, where your future predictions would always be correct.
Always correct, yeah.
Then that would mean that you have to basically destroy the other futures until only one remains. Like that's how the Loki series works, where they blow up all the other timelines. They nuke all the other timelines until one sacred timeline remains.
That would be like, yes. When doing anything in the Akashic Records, if people want me to predict the future, and they're like, I want you to use the Akashic Records to predict the future. I'm like, well, you're probably going to be really sad and you're probably not going to get what you want. Because the Akashic Records is like, it holds future potential. Like, that's the word that people use for it, is future potential. So in life, like, if you're like, what is the potential for me to get married someday? Not potential for me to marry this one specific person, just the potential for me to get married. And you have seven different timelines. And it's like, well, there are seven different options for what a long-term relationship looks like for you. Two of those options have, like, you don't get married. The other option is that you get married, but your wife dies a year after you get married. And you have five other, like, options, three of which exist with the same person, two of which exist with this one specific person. Based on your current trajectory, I predict that one of the three options with this specific person is going to be how it plays out. And it feels like this first branch is going to be more likely by 80%.
Okay.
So, like, that is how you would do it.
So you're dealing more with probability.
Yes.
Than with
the potential of something.
Future gazing.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Like the sort of prediction engines, the predictive analytics that computers do these days.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's like, it's when you're using the Akashic Records, it's very like, I would say it's scientific kind of in the way that like weather predicting, there's a 70% chance it's going to rain like that. That's more of what it is. Which is also, if you ever have a psychic who says that they can predict the future 100% accurately, do not pay them and leave.
Because they're with the fucking TVA.
Because it's with
they're
the
blowing
fucking
up timelines.
The sheep with the human head. You don't know what their body actually looks like. What if you're done? Anyway. Okay, are you?
It's a cow with a human
I couldn't
head.
Remember. Do you have any other questions before I finish this?
Nope.
Okay,
I was just trying to figure out the Akashic Records view of multiverse reality and timeline theories.
Love that. That would be – see, that's a great question to send to my email to get entered for an Akashic Record reading. Like, that's a great – because those are the things that I don't think about trying to explain. Okay. So we're going to talk about kind of like the last little bit here is really just what I did with that healing and like kind of how my journey was after I found like, oh, my abusive relationship in a previous lifetime, my abuser actually fucking murdered me. Cool. So this is kind of what I did with that. So one of my friends and colleagues specializes in emotion code. I messaged her and asked if she was interested in trying to release this. I was like, hey, I found this thing in my records. Do you think you want to try to see what we can do? Like, do you want to see if we can get rid of it? And she was like, I don't know. And she was like unsure if it would work, but we tried and it did work. So the process is thus, which this process, RJ, you can absolutely listen to this. I don't know if you're going to, like, get it, but ask what questions you have, okay? So I went in, and she opened the session in her normal way, which is, like, we established some, like, muscle testing baselines to check in with my body, see how we were doing, see if, like, my body agreed to be there. General emotions, so she, like, just did, like, the first check into everything and then cleared those. And then I pulled the energetic thread from that lifetime forward. So I pulled the belief forward and picked apart, like, so I pulled that lifetime and then found the thread that was that belief around love. And because she and I were really good friends and worked together, it was really easy for her to find that thread. So, like, I had found it for her. I kind of gave it to her in a way, and she attached onto it. And then, you know, we cleared it with my body's permission. We asked if my body was ready to release that belief. It was, and we did. We both treated the process with reverence and hope. It was this moment of understanding that I had changed my life. I really didn't feel better instantly. I still occasionally talk to the person who abused me for another year. I had very intense PTSD that involved planning to die by suicide, crying to my best friend, asking them why they didn't love me enough to save me from him, nightmares, etc. It was an uphill battle for about 8 months, and then I met a man that taught me the other half of that. Because that's what it is like when we go through these healing processes, you're doing these things to get to a place where you can have that, where you can be in love, where you can trust people. And that was something that I saw literally come to fruition 8 months after I had cleared this belief. So almost a full year later, after I had even found it, is when I was able to really benefit from clearing that and healing that. So I think it's important for me to share this because, like, the healing with the Akashic Records is not fucking easy. Like, this work is not easy. It's not supposed to be easy. It's supposed to be these, like, explorations of the things that have created us to be who we are, and then this conscious undoing of that. It's like going in for CBT, doing, you know, those kinds of intentional undoing in order to rebuild things, but you're doing it on a soul level. So you're doing it on that more etheric or spiritual level instead of that mental level. A lot of times those things can be the same thing, which is why I like to work with people who are receiving therapy and, like, psychiatric treatment. That's my preference, because it means that they're being put in a position where they understand the things that are being asked of them and they have support in changing them.
So I have some, I guess, questions. I think there are certain ethical dilemmas that come up with any kind of belief about past lives.
Okay.
I will let you finish first, but then we can discuss that.
Okay. So the Akashic Records are not a quick and easy fix to becoming rich, falling in love, or having all your dreams come true. The Akashic Records present opportunities for us to see where we have betrayed ourselves or chosen harm for ourselves in the past and then do it differently this time around. This is what I really view as the purpose and goal of the records. Humanity has reached a point that is familiar to others that have come before us. We're challenged with the environment being unable to sustain us at the rate we are used to. We are battling disease and natural disasters. The more we have built connection and communication between us, the more we've shared and reconnected to the stories of our ancestors. We've begun looking back at history and really wondering if we can do things differently this time. The Akashic Records are the history of everything. We can access them in a kind of liminal space that is metaphysical, and I believe that everyone can access them. That does not mean that everyone should be trusted to accurately convey the information or that the reasons people access them are always going to be in alignment with the purpose of the records. But I do think that everyone can get there and can access them. There are limitations to the records and their uses. One of the main limitations is that they do not hold the records of fate. Future potential is a phrase Sharon Klingler used in her course, and I really like that phrase. Basically, there is no fate. There isn't a book of all the things to come. Instead, there are threads of energy that get created as we go through life. The universe is kind of like a couch, or like our beautiful carpeted walls. A complex structure made of millions of threads. When we complete an action, it creates an energetic thread that reaches into the future, an option that you've set into motion. The Akashic Records also use a much larger scope for the things that it looks at. Of course, if I had the desire and focus, I could find entire details about someone's profession in a past life, likely down to the dates they began and finished a job. However, the real power of the Akashic Records sits in their ability to show us true perspective. For example, think about a former romantic relationship, one where you were really in love with that person. Remember how in that relationship it felt like the world wouldn't exist if they weren't a part of that. The end of that relationship was most likely really hard, traumatizing, and painful. It's a common experience for people to seek context and clarity about relationships like these from the Akashic Records. The records will be able to tell you the overall theme of that relationship. So that would be something like, you two have shared previous lifetimes, you struggled to be able to move the relationship into a more serious place, and this lifetime was trying to see if you could work out the kinks of that process. I'm seeing some issues around both of you feeling abandoned. An example of that is in a previous lifetime, he had to leave to serve in war and didn't come home. That left you feeling like you'd been left. Likewise, there was a lifetime where you got married to another man a month after you met him. He developed this belief that he wouldn't be good enough for you. In this lifetime, one of the challenges is both of you making the choice to choose each other in your relationship. Like, that would be the answer to that question in the Akashic Records. The records will not say things like, oh, he cheated on you with Rachel because you stole Rachel's boyfriend at a concert in the 1960s, so you had to suffer the same fate. Rachel has another soulmate that will be here in 6 weeks, and at that point, you can take your boyfriend back. Like, that's not ever going to be what the Akashic Records say. And so there's limitations in how we do that. I think this is a good time for you to ask your questions kind of about ethics and morals, because I'm going to jump into some, like, ethics and morals and perspective, too.
Okay. And, yeah, I feel like you're also kind of going to talk about this because you were doing some research and found out someone was trying to weaponize the Akashic Records, like, in war. But
yeah, that's one of the things. I didn't include that in this episode because I really need to – I need to do, like – I'm trying to get this person who proposed this to interview on the podcast and or to have an interview with me.
I don't know. That sounds a little frightening.
I know, but like, how the fuck does someone arrive at that? Like, how is someone like the Akashic Records? I could know about my past lives. Maybe that will tell us if we're going to have nuclear war. Like, what the fuck is that?
Well, I mean, it kind of makes sense, I guess, when I propose this ethical question. So you look back. So right now you're talking about internalizing the ideas from these past lives in order to change and better yourself.
Mm-hmm.
However, if somebody accesses this information and decides to externalize this information in order to basically affect someone else, you arrive at some problems. For example, you killed me in a past life, so I am justified in killing you or abusing you or hurting you because I know that you hurt me in a past life and you're going to do it again. So I'm going to kill you before you get me like you did before. Obviously that is unstable person talk, right? But if somebody gets an Akashic Records reading and their reader is like, oh, yeah, this person was like really bad. He like tortured you in your past life. And that person takes that information and then does something bad with it.
Then why the fuck are like, is that person existing and asking questions about people? And also, no, I will not be taking responsibility for that. Like, that is one of the things, like, for me as like an ethical reader and like where That's like where things get really like convoluted and cloudy, right? Because, and that's what you'll hear people talk about all the time. And even on my like my Akashic Record readings, like if you go to my Etsy right now and you look at the item descriptions, in my item descriptions, it will have a quote from someone about the Akashic Records and that like training is necessary in order to like accurately read the Akashic Records and that most people who learn how to read them should never read for other people. Like that is a thing that I literally have like in my thing, in my if you buy something from me. And that's because that shit happens all the time. And like crazy people are going to do crazy people things regardless of whether like if someone gets an Akashic Record reading and is like, you know, I've actually decided I need to kill that person. That's not because I gave them an Akashic Record reading. That's because they were going to do that anyway. And they were looking for an excuse, which is why like when you're doing readings like this, when you're using these records, when you're getting readings from people, take everything with a fucking grain of salt. Like, literally, calm down. I'm sorry. I have had some stuff this weekend that I'm not really happy about, like, about the ethics and morals. And, like, it is very complicated. This is a very complex job. This is a very hard job to do. Working with something like the Akashic Records is very tough. There are limitations to what I feel is appropriate to share with people. I think I can remember one reading that I gave to someone in a past life where she had been sexually harmed, and I felt that it was necessary to give her details. I don't ever give those details because why does someone need to know that?
Hmm. Are you familiar with the term info hazard or information hazard?
No, but I'm sure that, like, I know what it is.
Yeah, I mean, the title itself is pretty self-explanatory. It's like an ethical thing where basically, should we keep some information hidden because it is dangerous information? Mm-hmm. For example, should
UFOs.
We...
UFOs.
Yeah, or... well, I mean, the obvious example that the person who coined this phrase is philosopher Nick Bostrom. I literally just Googled that. Anyway, should we publish the plans for how to build your own nuclear warhead at home?
Right.
And some would argue that something like the Anarchist Cookbook, which like teaches mm-hmm. you how to make chemical weapons, is an information hazard because you could hurt yourself or hurt other people because not everybody is a nuclear physicist and is an expert on that. And so they could take that information and not be able to interpret it properly.
Right. So here's the thing. If you have someone who's like, I've been studying the Akashic Records and you killed me in a past life, and that means that it is my karmic due to kill you. No, you're not working with the Akashic Records. No, you are not learning the things that you need to learn. No, that is not the case. No, that is not what's supposed to be happening. If that is your approach, there's something really wrong. I mean, someone who for any reason is like, I need to go kill this person – probably we really need to be on some medication because that's not normal. I mean, another thing that happens in here is like you – and I think that you accidentally gave a really good example of this, that like things have to be inherently good or bad. Like humans really, really love to know if something is always good or always bad, right? That's kind of the question you're asking is like, well, if this is so dangerous, shouldn't it be bad? Shouldn't we not have this? And like with the – kind of what I'm going to arrive at with the idea of using the Akashic Records for war, which I don't think is possible. I don't think that they can get the people who are actually like, because to do what they want people to do with the Akashic Records, you would need like my level of experience plus 4 years of dedicated study to the Akashic Records. So,
well, I mean, that sounds like it's within the budget of the U.S. military.
Yeah, that's fine. We can do that. This is my villain origin story, in case you was wondering. This is when it all starts. And that article was, by the way, released in 2020. It was January 8th, 2020 is when he wrote, like, when that article was released. And it's in, like, Futurist World magazine or some shit like that. And, like, I just – if – that it just wouldn't work.
Yeah, it seems like...
And like, one of the things is, I mean, I'm sure that I've made it sound really easy, right? That I'm like, well, just go look up a meditation for 30 minutes and then you can look at the Akashic Records and this is what you can do with them. Like, I've made it sound that way for sure. That's not true.
I mean, it seems like the Akashic records should be used to internalize information and help you process things about your past life rather than being used for somebody else's past life.
Well, why would they be used for someone else's past lives? Like,
well, I mean, why would they be used? War? Because if you can examine someone's past.
But what reader is going to do that? Like, that's the thing.
Obviously, this guy who wrote this article.
No, he's not a reader. He's a scientist.
Well, I'm theoretically, if the U.S. military,
it's impossible because it wouldn't happen.
If the U.S. military is to be like, you know, this guy is onto something, let's get, you know, the top Akashic records readers and start the metaphysical branch of the U.S. military.
They don't need to start shit. It's already there. Like, come on, let's. No, I'm serious. It's already there. They have clairvoyant studies that they're doing.
I guess
right now.
I guess yeah. Like, there are like the CIA.
They already have that.
The CIA clairvoyant documents, but. Yeah, so basically you read somebody's past life and then you have that person give that probability thing about the future to essentially manipulate that person and create information that might manipulate that
person. Well, but then you're not using the Akashic records. Then that's not what you're doing. Then you're manipulating someone.
Yes.
Which is not the same thing as actually using them.
Well, I mean, you're utilizing the Akashic records to
get information. But how would you – but like, OK, right, cool. We're going to use it for information. Do you think that something that is controlled by guides that you like have to have, they're going to give you information about things that should never happen?
I mean, are there evil guides?
No. There's not evil anything. There are things that are going to happen and things that aren't going to happen. And it's all like, it is all energy neutral. It's not good or bad. And like, I think that, okay, let me read this. Let me just go ahead and read this so you can like get out of the black and white. Ready? I have a whole paragraph about this.
Okay.
Something else to consider when working with the records is the lenses we use when we are looking at them. Humanity has evolved to a place that really loves black and white thinking and certainties. RJ is one of these humans that fucking loves it. The growth of Christianity has really given us all the sense that things are either bad or good and that they need to decide what they are. Part of emotional and spiritual maturity is learning how to hold space for things that are in that gray area. And the hope is that we all grow to understand that everything is some shade of gray. Nothing is inherently good or bad. I'm going to spend future episodes talking about this in depth, but the Akashic records are just information. They offer context. They don't offer judgment built into them. And if one comes to them with judgment in mind, you're not going to find what you're looking for.
So, I mean, yes, it is just information, right? But can that information be utilized?
Yes, okay, get a deck of tarot cards. Go get a fucking Ouija board and give it to someone. Of course it can be. That doesn't mean that's how people are going to use them.
I mean,
you just want it to be bad. Like,
no,
what's your thing?
No,
What's your thing with this right now?
I'm not out here saying I want the Akashic records to be bad. I am saying that, I don't know, maybe proposing to use it for war.
But I'm not. Why are you mad at me about that?
I'm not mad at you at all.
Like, I'm saying that's not a possibility to use them that way. And that's my thing, is that these things that are proposed, you don't even, like, this guy does not even know enough about what he's talking about to say that. I want to have a conversation with him because I want to find out, like, exactly what he's smoking that makes him think that this would work, or, like, what his basis is. Because in his, like, article, he has plotted a 5-point system for what it would look like to use people who are Akashic Record readers. And then he's like, well, there might be a moral issue because some of these readers might not feel like it's a good idea to use them for war.
Using anything for war is a moral issue.
What if people are really going to get hurt? And if we can use the Akashic records to tell us that people are going to get hurt because we need to protect America, obviously some of these psychics will think that's okay.
Yeah, Philip K. Dick wrote that book. It's called Minority Report.
So, like, that's the whole, like, that's how, I mean, it just is so, like, off base from what would happen. I don't know a reader that would do it. A lot of the things, like, so say you have someone who's, like, has, like, a grudge, has a thing against this person, and they're like, oh, my God, Elle told me that I could read the Akashic records, and I know that I have a past life of this person. So I'm gonna meditate, I'm going to go into the Akashic records, I'm going to find something, and that's going to validate that I need to kill this person. If that's what you're looking for, and it's as, like, complex and untangible as a memory, That person can invent literally whatever they want to justify their behavior, which people do all the time. That doesn't mean they're using the Akashic records. That means that they're delusional and using whatever they need to justify what they're going to do.
I suppose that is the thing with perceptually infinite information. You get things like, you know, Fermi paradox and stuff like that. Infinity loves, you know, paradoxes where if there's infinite possibilities in the Akashic records, then you could find anything that would validate your beliefs. And we're seeing that
a lot.
You can
look at it with your lens. Like
with
just
the perceptually infinite information of the internet where, I mean, it's not infinite, but it's more than we can perceive. And so it is infinite to us. Yeah, I have a fun game. I have the three different kinds of info hazards. I'm going to read them, and you're going to tell me if they are present in the Akashic records or if somebody can access this information using the Akashic records, this kind of information.
Okay.
All right. The first kind of information hazard is a data hazard. A piece of data that can be used to harm others, such as the DNA sequence of a lethal pathogen.
Yes.
Yes, that is in the Akashic records?
Yes.
All right. Idea hazards. General ideas that can harm others if fulfilled. One example is the idea of using a fission reaction to create a bomb. Knowing this idea alone can be enough for a well-resourced team to develop a nuclear bomb.
Yes.
So there are
the Holocaust.
Idea hazards in there.
I mean, the belief that the Aryan race is the master race that has come to save the world.
Yeah.
Obtained from the Akashic records. I mean, it wasn't from the Akashic records, but yes.
Okay. And then a knowing too much hazard. Information.
Oh, no, that's just my life. You don't even have to say anything. That's just me.
I will still define it for the show. Information that, if known, can cause danger to the person who knows it. For example, women who know things about the occult are at higher risk of being accused of witchcraft and killed, or knowing things about the mob and then coming and killing them.
Yeah, of course. But like one of the things about the Akashic records and about like all divine and like liminal space acquired information is that you're not going to be shown things that are dangerous to you if you are going through someone who is trusted. If you're coming to me and you have these things and you're like, say you're mentally like unstable or like trying to get your mental stuff figured out. I have a lot of clients like that are just, you know, in therapy, working on some shit, trying to get some stuff figured out, trying to get, you know, obsessions, compulsions, all of that stuff under control. I haven't had a client that I know of that I have like given information to that has then gone and done something terrible, because I really view it as like my goal to bring them down and get grounded and like help and like kind of calm people. But I would say like the reason that I do readings the way that I do, and the reason that I use a guide, and the reason that I have a translator, and the reason that like I have all these different layers and ways that I do things, is so that I don't get into that kind of shit. Because I don't fucking know. Like, I'm just a human. I have no idea, like, if I have a reader or if I have a client who comes and sits with me and they just have, like, all of this really intense stuff. I don't know if I'm like, so let's talk about your relationship with your dad. Like, if that is something that they haven't dealt with, that they haven't talked about, touched on for 10 years, and that's going to just, you know, take them, like, just push them beyond the limit. I don't know that. So that's why I let my guides and those people's guides, like, that's why we work with divine things, because humans are fallible. Not that divinity isn't fallible, but that there's other things that are, like, presenting things in an amount of information that you can handle. Like, I could spend this entire lifetime, right now, I could just sit down and meditate and read probably my whole book back to front to try to understand myself. I'm not going to gain anything from doing that. You could, but the point is that you take things contextually and then you move through your life. You're supposed to use the things from our Akashic records to influence, impact, and fix things in your current life so that you can continue that evolution. It's an idea of evolution. And it's an idea of like utilizing things to understand the balances, I would say. And I do have a paragraph about that. But I mean, I think like The Akashic Records, I would say, are less dangerous than other forms of divination because people don't fucking know how to use them. So, like, they're, like, so obscure that it's, like, what you'll find is if some random person has not studied it, is not a psychic, has, like, done 4 meditations, and they're, like, I'm going to access the Akashic Records, and I'm going to use it, and I'm going to go to the White House, and I'm going to tell them everything I found about them in the Akashic Records. Like,
to, like, I don't know, blackmail them or something?
Yeah. Okay. Good luck with that. Like, I mean, it just is, it's such a, like, that's the thing is, I've been doing this work for, I mean, like, heavily focused on the Akashic Records for probably the last 3 years, 3.5 years. And I would say that if they came to me and they were like, hey, you're the top Akashic Record reader. We read all of your reviews on Etsy. We know you're the GOAT.
Yeah, the CIA showed up.
Yeah, they're like, oh, we've been like, fucking looking
for
you.
This is going to go one of two ways. The easy way or the hard way.
Right.
You assist your country. You retire. You have a good life. Or you assist your country
is
and
there,
you stay
wait,
in a cell.
Wait, you have a terrible life. What is the insurance like from the government? Is it good insurance? I mean, I would do a lot of things for some good insurance, including get married. I mean, you know.
The VA hospital is not as robust as it should be.
Yeah.
But who knows? The secret VA hospital might actually be really good.
Oh, is that – would I be a veteran technically? I don't know. Anyway – I think if they came to me and they were like, hey, we have like some questions, we want to do this, I would feel unable to do what they wanted me to do. Like, for real.
So if the CIA showed up and they were like, we need you to read Vladimir Putin's Akashic Records so that we can find some weakness in his character.
Oh, no, I
could
do
that. Exploit.
Yeah, I could do that.
See, that is how I think this would be.
But I could, like, I mean, so I'll have to send you the article so you can read it before we do the episode on him. I really, 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 really hope I can get him for an interview. That's what I want. I want to interview him for the podcast. I don't know if that's going to happen. So I'll send you the article so we can talk about it. Because it just is kind of like, I don't know. I mean, I was like blown away when I was researching and I found that. I was like, what the fuck? Like, what are we doing? But at the same time, of course, because like the only thing good that's spiritual is what can be exploited.
I mean, that is how capitalism works.
Yeah, like
is like you differences from the norm will be punished unless exploited. The Marxist reading of Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
Yep. So, to go back to like talking about the good and bad and like the context with that. For example, I had a reading with a client this summer. So she got an Akashic Records reading from me, and she had previously bought a past life reading. And she was like really excited for the reading and this whole thing. So I got to the past life part of her reading. A past life where she had been impoverished came forward. And I just like communicated that, explained it, whatever. After I completed the reading and sent it to her, she messaged me wanting to know how it was possible that she had been poor in previous lifetimes. She literally wrote me and said, I have not had a lifetime where I was poor. I had a reading done previously that said I never have struggled with money. And I was genuinely like taken aback. Like I was like, whoa.
Did you know that being poor is more common than being wealthy?
Right. I was like, so part of it was her reaction to poverty, because she's basically saying that there's like morality to poverty, right? Like, oh, well, I've never been one of those people.
See,
those poor people.
That is so fucking crazy and broken. And there's a lot of people that think that.
A lot of people.
I saw a TikTok of some lady who was road raging. She kept calling this other person poor because her tag was expired. Like, you can't afford to fix your tag. Poor, poor, poor. And I'm like, oh my God. Like, equating money to morality
is not
only dangerous, but it is morally sickening.
Yeah, well, and also, like, the idea of, like, looking at people who have money as, like, more morally correct is fucking fascinating. Because let's just go ahead and look at, like, Jeff Bezos and Elon Musk. Like, that's the thing, is that we all know that's not fucking true.
Yes, but those people can market themselves very well into exactly. thinking that. For example, through use of like targeted philanthropy. You know, there's things named after John D. Rockefeller.
Yeah.
He committed mass murder, but he's venerated. And so we get this like fallacy of money equals morally good,
mm-hmm.
When the opposite is far more likely to be true.
Yeah. And I just like, and also, so like, let's think about, you know, karma. What do you know about karma? Do you want to like give like a brief?
I mean, there is
your understanding of karma, I guess.
There is the like actual like religious part of like Hinduism karma. Mm-hmm. And then there's like the colloquial way we talk about karma outside of that religious space. And the common way I think people in America talk about karma outside of these Hindu beliefs is that what you do will come back to you. So if you are good, you will receive good things. If you are bad, you will receive bad things. So it is good to do acts of kindness because you will receive acts of kindness in return. If you are a dick, you will receive dickishness in return.
Yeah. And that's like – so – and I'm going to talk more about – because obviously a huge reason that we look at the Akashic Records is for karma. Like that's – people look at the Akashic Records or they say that the Akashic Records are where the idea of like karma and past lives come from. And the Akashic Records like – it is widely believed by people who practice that they're like an innate part of – the universe, like that they've existed as long as the universe has. So when we look at like karma and when people talk about karma, they want to know about like contracts and like karma with people. And most often people think that karma is like, well, you murdered me in a past life, so now you must give me $1 million in this lifetime because that's how we make things right. Like it's this idea of justice. And I would say that karma is not really justice. Karma is like a natural consequence of things that happen. And so like an example of karma that would be like maybe an underwhelming example of karma is like the relationship I have with my best friend. Like when we were in college, their family really took me in and supported me and made sure that I had a family to go to because I was so far away from mine. And a natural consequence of that is when they moved to where I am, my family was like, hey, guess what? You have a family to take care of you while you're far away from your family. That's like a very underwhelming example of karma, but it is a karmic thing because it's like the idea of, you know, doing a thing and having that exact energy come back to you. That would be like in my previous example when I had talked about the two like mythical people that shared a previous lifetime where one of them left because, or let's see. So like the example I used was that in this like mythical relationship, they were like dating and the man had to leave to go to war and didn't come home. And that left her feeling very like abandoned, like, oh, he left me, like really, really left me to never come back. And then in another lifetime, she was like, well, then screw you. I'm going to leave you, and left like him with the baby. And so that's an example of how karma and like the idea of like feeling abandoned can come back around, but look different the next time.
I just am looking up karma and all the different beliefs that all the different religions basically that believe in karma. And there are quite a few, most of them
a
Eastern,
lot, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But there's also an entry for theosophy in
yep.
here, which is interesting.
Yeah, so I'm going to read a little paragraph about kind of my perception of karma. And this is an important paragraph to listen to for you, RJ, for our listeners. It's kind of the next thing. So karma is something that the Western world has really taken to project the importance of positive behavior. Like once religion kind of fell away and we were like, oh, well, we need something to make people feel like they have to do something good. We're going to tell people that karma is the reason they have to behave, right? Like
I have an issue with these boogeyman concepts.
Yeah, I hate that. That's like my biggest thing. To me, karma is a series of consequences for our actions. Consequences are not good or bad, just the natural progression of decisions. My cosmology is based around emanation, and the idea of, like, emanation is what theosophy is based off of, as well as a belief that we all emanate or come from source, that we are all the universe experiencing itself. So, like, that's my perspective.
You are the you in universe.
You are the you in universe. Fucking just, like, y'all, if you want to just watch some whack documentaries, Google the Akashic Records and, like, look on YouTube and, like, look at all of the bad bad, bad documentaries you could watch. But that idea of like to me, we are a soul is a piece of source gaining experience. So Edgar Cayce, who we're going to spend a lot of time with, I have told one of my partners that he's my NRE, like he's my new partner that I'm obsessed with, which is great. So we're going to spend a lot of time with him. But he explained through his readings that the purpose of our incarnations, the purpose of our lifetimes, is to become a companion of God. And he is very Christian, so he uses God as in capital G, Christian God. And the idea is by experiencing a huge variety of lifetimes and constantly working towards compassion and understanding of not only ourselves, but all humans. And that means understanding what God goes through when he creates us. So in that process, you're going to have lifetimes with incredible wealth and lifetimes with incredible poverty. And it actually is the way that it's supposed to be. Because if you don't have that, you're not going to be able to complete your goals.
That sounds a little more Buddhist, where you repeat these lifetimes to learn and grow as you reach enlightenment. And you can backslide in these, and you can get a lot of progress in one lifetime. You can lose all that progress again. But they're also
I would say that I object to the idea of being able to gain and or lose, because I'm not sure that there's an end goal so much as a process that we go through, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But that is nitpicky.
It is an eternal process toward enlightenment. Mm-hmm. And it appears very rare that people actually get all the way to this supposed finish line.
So for Buddhists, there is an idea of that one, or one version of that is the monks who are totally still and just they are still alive, but they don't eat, they don't drink, they just meditate. And that is their idea of going to nirvana. When we get down into the nitty gritty, this is their cosmology, this is their cosmology, this is Edgar Cayce's, this is Blavatsky's, this is L's. When we start getting really into that, which is part of what I'm doing in this book, is picking apart why I think we need to change how we look at the Akashic records, because a lot of the ways that we've approached them, a lot of the ways that we've approached karma are totally colonized and based in Christianity. And that's not serving anyone. Yeah. And so it's time to kind of rip those things away. But when we get down to that, the difference between Edgar Cayce saying we're trying to become a companion of God and my thought of where the universe experiencing itself is really we're trying to get to the point of being on the same level of source to understand that. And the idea is the same as God, but God and source are not the same. And so it is really picking apart things, which, don't worry, this is what I'm doing. This is why I took philosophy in college, I guess, so I could write this damn book on the philosophy and spirituality and all of that. So I guess if y'all like my opinions, so we can.
I mean, there are a lot of ways that karma and reincarnation can be used as a boogeyman concept or as an oppressive concept. You know, one example might be caste systems, you're being oppressed because in a past life you had a really good life, so now it's your turn to be oppressed.
Well, and we don't even have to go to caste. We can literally have you heard of the cult Nexium?
Yes.
Nexium had all of their inner circle, or all of the people in their inner circle were they were evil in a past life. They were part of Hitler's
Oh my God.
Yes. And they were I think the leader of Nexium.
The more I looked at this, the more I didn't want to.
Yeah. I listened to a whole podcast series on it. But the leader of Nexium, I think, was either he was Hitler or he was Jesus. I can't remember which, but he was one of the two. And part of that was he would tell, I think he was Jesus, the savior. And he would say that everyone had to pay him back because they had been Nazis. And I mean, they use that all the time. That is a very, if someone's looking at you and they're in a past life, blah, blah, blah. None of past lives really don't matter to anyone except the soul that has experienced them. That's the only person who really needs to know them. That's the only person who's going to gain anything from understanding them, because it's just context. It doesn't actually, those past lives are, guess what? Done. They're over. You're dead. It already happened. So now we're going to move on. Now we're going to take that information and keep going. It's kind of the idea. But you could, and I mean, I think you can see how deeply complex this is, and that you're I don't fucking, what the fuck is this though? And that it's a thing in here.
Of course. I mean, there are some things that, especially with when we get into, like, you know, Aleister Crowley shit, where things are intentionally complex and intentionally abstract
in order to
gatekeep it. You know, like, I am the, like, the Nexium guy, right? Like, I am the one who was able to untangle this complex web of information. And so you must come to me and give me offerings so that I may continue to, you know.
You should definitely get drunk and let him put a brand on your vagina of his name. Because that's, no, that's what he did. That was, like, the, some of the, abuse, Yeah, and I think, like, your point of, like, well, if anyone could access these, couldn't they be used for evil? Like, and I mean, I do think that that's a thing. I think that there's a lot to be said for taking the gatekeeping away from this work. And I think allowing people to understand that they're in control over it. But also, we have to be really sensitive about people who are mentally unwell or people who want things to be a certain way or people who can be really, you know, suggestive, suggest very, people who
are looking for justification for conclusions they've already drawn.
I'm trying to find, like, suggestive. Like, all they need is, like, one person to say one thing. Oh, your dad's a bad person, for them to kind of go, you know. And so that balance is something that I'm very aware of and something that, like, balancing that which is sacred and that which is it should be, can be, could be utilized and accessed by everyone is a hard thing. Like, that's a hard thing to balance in this work. And I think that's why we don't have very much information, because a lot of people look at this and they're like, I don't fucking want to do this work. I don't want to look at this. I don't want to have to navigate that. But I'm here. I'm doing it. I'm showing up. I'm ready for the work. So this is my introduction to the Akashic Records. In the next episode of the series, we're going to dive headfirst into Madame Helena Petrovna, however you say your name, Petrovna, Blavatsky, and Theosophy. That episode is going to be nuts, especially if you haven't heard of HPB.
There's some wild shit. Some absolutely wild. Like, if you thought people like Marie Ogden and the Home of Truth and, like, Lenormand were, like, fucking wild, or like Sylvia Plath's, like, adventures were wild, like, this Blavatsky person is just a fucking rap sheet of occult messiness.
Yeah, like, I found a book, because she had a list. She had, like, a membership roster of the Great White Lodge.
I cannot with the Great White Lodge.
And the Great White Lodge is, like, the ascended masters of the universe.
Her dad,
her bodyguard. Like,
I just can't. Why do all these cult leaders have to be like, hey, you know, in a past life, you were basically Alexander the Great?
Well, and I think, like, so I've done a lot of past life readings, and I mean, the amount of lifetimes that I find or things that I point out where someone was, like, a historical figure is literally never. I have never found someone that was, like, an actual, like, you've been Napoleon Bonaparte. Like, I've never found that for a lot of reasons. I have found people having muses of or guides, like, being guided by, like, artists. And that kind of stuff, absolutely, like muses and that kind of thing. But I have not found people that have these, like, crazy significant lifetimes. The vast majority of time, like, a lifetime is like, oh, you were an impoverished serf in the 1500s of Germany and you stole bread and you had 6 kids and your parents died young. Like, that, I mean, like, that's okay, it's about as exciting as it gets.
But can you find someone from Hamelin in, like, 1300 that was a child that could tell us where the children have gone?
Line up every person, bring them in. I don't, like, and so that's the thing is, like, there are real, true limitations to what you can. There's so much information that you have to be able to be so specific, so pinpointed, so clear, have such a strong connection, trust, like, implicitly the information that you're getting to know, like, to even do anything with this. That, like, that's why people can't get it. That's why they can't access it. That's why it feels like this hidden, unknown, secret thing, which I don't think it should be, but I think it's important that we talk about all this stuff so we can, like, stop the fucking scammers, you know? That's my thought. So please email me questions. I'll be adding in probably a question answering section to like these episodes, and or taking questions that have been asked to me and like putting them throughout the episodes that are just the questions. Or I might just save all the questions and do like a whole episode that's just the questions on the Akashic Record. I haven't asked RJ if that's okay, but that might be a thing that I do. One of the things that's proven difficult is figuring out what I want to talk about. So it'll be helpful to have those thoughts and questions from everyone. Instead of doing a reading for each of these episodes, I'm going to do a lottery for a full Akashic Record reading, which I'm currently charging $75 for on my Etsy. If you're a patron, you already get a free entry into the lottery. Other than being a patron, you can enter by emailing me a question. You only get one question, one entry per episode. So like only one email per episode for,
patrons get a free entry?
They get a free entry. Mm-hmm.
But the other entries cost money?
No, they just have to send me a question. They get entered for a reading if they send me something that they want to know about,
okay,
a question that they have, a topic they want me to cover.
But patrons don't have to send you anything.
No, they just get entered into it.
Okay.
So they can have, like, so we have Enon. So Enon is a patron, so he gets one entry for being a patron. And then probably, I bet he'll send me an email for every single episode. So then if I do 5 episodes, he'll have a total of 6 entries.
Oh, so Enon gets double entries.
No, he gets one entry for the patron and one entry per email sent.
Oh, so just an extra, a bonus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a bonus one. So, like, He doesn't have to send anything to be entered for that. He already gets to because he's a patron. And people who can't afford to be patrons, people who aren't patrons, can enter to win it by sending me, like, an email question, thoughts that they want me to tackle with the Akashic Records. But they can't send me 20 emails and have all of those count as entries. It's just one email per person per episode.
Per part of Akashic
yes.
Records
mm-hmm.
coverage from you.
Yep. And so if I do 5 episodes, then everyone can have up to 5 entries plus their one for Patreon.
Okay.
And if you're confused by that, too goddamn bad, I guess. I don't know.
Okay.
It makes sense, I feel like.
It took me a minute, but I think I got it.
Maybe we should. Patrons
get a bonus entry.
Yep, they get an entry just for being patrons.
I think that's it. Like, email a question for an entry, patrons will get a bonus entry.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
Okay.
Don't spam me. Otherwise, you definitely won't get a free reading.
Disqualified.
Disqualified if you annoy me. Those are the rules that I work under. RJ's going to have a fortune cookie.
I'm going to have a fortune cookie. We're not doing the reading at the end of the episode, so I will reach into our fortune cookie bucket.
Do my it's true and it's about. Do the whole ceremony.
I forget the ceremony.
You have to say it's true and it's about. Oh my god, you have to like say what it's about before you break it. Fuck.
I'll put it back together. I ruined the ceremony. Cursed. Absolutely cursed.
What does the fortune say? Yeah, you have to eat it. Good job.
Use your charm and personality to obtain your wishes.
Yeah, whatever that was about your personality, I'm not sure. Use your charm. Use your charm and personality to obtain your wishes.
Oh boy. My wish right now is for more cookies.
More cookies? Well, you can have them.
Wish granted.
Yeah, yay! That was a good little reading. So you can support us by sharing our podcast. You can join our Patreon if you want to get a reading.
Patreon.com/Mancy if you want to join.
Yes. And you can find me on my Etsy at Laurels of Lux, or my website, laurelsoflux.com, or my email, laurelsoflux@gmail.com.
If you want some of my writing, you can go to rjwalkerpoet.com.
Do you want to say who our music is by?
Oh, yeah.
I didn't put that on.
Music was provided by Hayden Folker and Scott Buckley. In that order. No Mew, because we didn't do a reading.
We didn't do a reading. No. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.